Hey, everybody, it is Trags Mike Petralia back with another episode of the Red Sox Beat on the CLNS Media Network. It is powered by our good friends and our exclusive online gaming partner, betonline.ag. Joining me on this mid-September Red Sox Beat, well, actually early September, September 6th qualifies as early September, is the one and only Ian Brown of RedSox.com, does a fabulous job and has since, I believe, 2002. Right, Ian?
That was correct, Trags.
20th year covering your Boston Red Sox. You can follow him on Twitter at Ian M. Brown with an E at the end. All one word. He does a fabulous job. All right, Ian, this is not the season that a lot of Red Sox fans were hoping for at the start. A lot of things did not go well. The health of the pitching staff, I would say, top of that list in terms of factors that didn't go in the favor of the ball club and Alex Cora. Your thoughts on what you think really led to the disappointing end or actually the disappointing result of likely not making the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is they got off to a terrible start. I mean, this team was just completely dead the first, 5 weeks of the season. And then they spent so much energy. They were nine games under 500 by early May. They spent so much energy getting back and then getting back over 500 and having a great June. And then, I think they just get a little tired from that because they were playing with kind of like a playoff intensity there to get back in the race in the month of June. And really, when I look at this season, though, Trags, the one thing I look at besides the injuries is that this bullpen was just never built
right,
like a winning team's bullpen. And every time I see the Red Sox play a good team, I'm like, wow, this team has one good reliever after another to throw at you. I saw it with the Rays yesterday. I saw it when they played the Braves. I've seen it time and again. And this team, they did lose Tanner Houck in September, which hurt their bullpen, but they've just been too thin in that bullpen the entire season. And it was something we all questioned going into the year. Don't they want to do a little more to upgrade this bullpen? And it was a big mystery why Heim Bloom never addressed that. And then at the trading deadline, we're okay. You have to remember at the trade deadline, while they were still only one or two games back in the wild card, I think they were three games back on the trade deadline. You're like, okay, here's a chance to upgrade the bullpen. And again, they didn't make any bullpen moves. And you've seen that play out time and again all year long. When the Red Sox have a close game, a low-scoring close game in the mid-innings, unless Whitlock and Schreiber are available that day, they're probably going to lose because the rest of the middle relief and late relief is just not good enough. So that, to me, I'll always remember this team for just not having a major league bullpen.
And Ryan Brazier is somebody that, I look back, I believe it was the middle game of the series against the Twins where they had a chance to hold on and he couldn't. He just fell apart in the eighth inning.
Gave up a grand slam.
Grand slam, correct. And, that is the kind of game where the Red Sox can't afford, that had no margin for error, and they had nobody to rely on in the bullpen. And, you make an interesting point, Ian, about the trade deadline. And Eric Hosmer and Tommy Pham are very competent, good clubhouse guys, good guys to bring on your club at that time. But when the team had such other pressing priorities, it made no sense to me. And I've had Alex Barth on this podcast from 98.5, the Sports Hub. And I've told him this, and I've used this expression before. It's almost as if Heim Bloom made those deals in case the Red Sox made a run and made the playoffs.
Right.
To spur them on to make a run in the playoffs.
Yeah, and his defense on those two moves, you have to remember at the time he made those moves, the Red Sox lineup was extremely banged up. They were without Trevor Story. They were without Kike Hernandez.
Right.
Rafael Devers was just coming back at the trade deadline. JD Martinez hadn't been hitting. So he was just trying to give the offense some spark. Pham has actually done a very nice job for this team. He's kind of stabilized the leadoff spot. And Hosmer was supposed to be their guy at first base because they haven't had – the first base situation was as bad as the bullpen. I mean, they had Bobby Dalbec and Franchy Cordero, who just did not do the job really offensively or defensively
right
at that spot. So Hosmer is going to stabilize that. Unfortunately, Trags, the guy, he has a serious back injury like a week or two after he gets there. He has some a serious disc issue in his back, so I'm not sure he's going to play again this season. So there went the stabilization they were seeking at first base. And, you know, now we're going to get to this later, but now they're going to have Tristan Casas over there for the rest of the season. But, yeah, so they it's just – but, yeah, the trading deadline was very curious because they traded Christian Vasquez, which I think affected – the clubhouse for a couple of weeks, especially
I can imagine it did.
Yeah, Xander Bogaerts and Rafael Devers, who coincidentally or not, both didn't hit a lick in August, and they were very good friends with Christian Vasquez. And Bogaerts, I've never seen him so upset as I saw him that day after the Vasquez trade when he talked to us. He was just kind of distraught about it. So I you know, a lot of people still don't get that move. They got a couple prospects, but they're not top. I mean, these guys like rounded out the top 30 in the Astros farm system. They got two they were like 29 and 30 in Houston's farm system. So maybe they hit on one of those guys and Christian's a free agent at the end of the year. But if they're going to add Pham, they're going to add Hosmer, you know, why not just keep Vasquez? Because once Vasquez went, they figured, okay, now they're going to trade JD Martinez. Now they're going to trade Nathan Eovaldi. And they ended up keeping those guys. So it all led to a lot of confusion of like, you know, what is the direction of this team right now?
So before we move on to Tristan Casas, who debuted in the 5-2 win over the Rangers on Sunday at Fenway, I do want to get to what the Red Sox are going to do at the top of the rotation next year, because that is a massive, massive question mark. Chris Sale broke his wrist. You know, and we thought after the broken pinky, he may not have come back anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if he was going to come back, Trags, I think it's academic. If he was going to come back, I think it only would have been in late September if they were in the race.
Right.
And the way things have panned out, he would not have come back. But it was just the whole optics of the thing. You know, a bike accident on the hottest day of the summer. This guy who just broke his pinky. So, you know, who knows about the bike accident? Nobody saw it. Who knows, you know, what really happened there.
Do you think he's going to be ready for 2023?
Yes, I do think he's going to be ready for 2023, assuming he doesn't have any other setbacks. I mean, right now, it's just broken bones. You know how it is, Trags, broken bones, they heal. You know, give them time and they heal. His arm, the frustrating thing about this, Trags, was his arm was very built up this year. He spent his entire offseason playing long toss. He said he was having, like, he called it like Tarzan, like long tosses with Nick Pivetta. And he was really throwing well when he did come back. And that first start in Tampa Bay, he came back. It was the second week in July, the Monday before the All-Star break. You're like, okay, this is going to play. I mean, this guy is, it's not going to be like last year when he's coming back from Tommy John and, you know, he's waiting for his arm. His arm is strong. And then in the first inning of his second start, for him to get that line drive off the pinky. I mean, this guy has just had terrible luck, really, ever since he signed this 5-year contract, which is kind of turned into kind of an albatross for this team. I mean, $150 million, and they've gotten not many starts from him. I mean, this season he ended up getting $15 million a start for the two starts he made. So he's got 2 years left on the contract, so you'd really like to see him salvage something out of this contract. But it's hard to know, Trags, can you bank on him to be an ace next year?
I don't think so.
He hasn't pitched a full season since 2019. So I think that your best Red Sox team here is kind of building someone, you know, maybe adding someone in front of him. You know, Michael Walker has pitched like an ace this season.
I was going to ask you about him, and how much can you lean on Michael Walker at his age to carry on into 2023.
Yeah, you know what the funny thing about Michael Walker is, Trags, is that everyone thinks this guy's like 35 or 36 because he's been around so long. He just turned 31. So he's still, you know, a pretty young guy. And with him, it's just a matter of staying healthy. I mean, he had two stints on the IL this year, so I don't think you can count on him as a 32-start, 200-inning pitcher. The only guy this team can count on for innings right now as their constructor right now is Nick Pivetta, but he's just not a consistent pitcher, but he makes every start, you know? So that's one guy you could slot in and say, okay, we're going to get between 150 to hopefully 200 innings out of Nick Pivetta. But after that, there's a lot of questions in this rotation. You know, what are they? That's the age old question we've been asking for the last 2 years. What is the future of Hauk and Whitlock? Are they starters or are they relievers? My personal feeling is that Hauk has really taken to this bullpen role. And I think they're just going to say, Tanner, you're our bullpen stopper. You're going to go to the bullpen. I think Whitlock, they're going to give him a shot to start. And they're going to have to build, you know, not only do they have to build, this is going to be a big offseason for Chaim Bloom.
Yes.
Not only do they have to build the rotation, they got to build the bullpen, man. They got to build a big time bullpen. And just that's what's killed them this year is the bullpen and just their record against the American League East. I mean, they're 20 something games under 500 against AL East teams. I think they've won two series all season against AL East teams. So that's been, they've been exposed in their own division. And the reason is obvious. It's because they don't have a bullpen. The offense has underachieved at times. It's been very inconsistent. When the Red Sox have played their best baseball, it's when they've been hitting, because this team was really built around their offense, and the offense just hasn't been consistent enough.
He is Ian Brown. He does a great job covering the Red Sox for MLB.com. Follow him on Twitter at Ian M. Brown, E at the end, all one word. Football is back, and Bet Online is your number one source for all of your football betting needs and sports info this season. Find all of the latest football odds, news, and game matchups, including this year's opening week's games, including this Thursday night against Los Angeles Rams, the defending Super Bowl champions, open up with the Buffalo Bills. Bet Online is your continued source for all of your wagering information, including live betting, free contests, and live scores. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports and events, including MLB, MMA, tennis, boxing, and yes, even golf. Head on over to betonline.ag to join and receive your 100% welcome bonus with your very first deposit. Make sure to use the promo code CLNS50 to receive your rewards. BetOnline, where the game starts. Back with Ian Brown of RedSox.com and MLB.com. All right, we teased it a little while ago, and I want to get to it now. Tristan Casas made his major league debut, going 1-for-4 on Sunday in the 5-2 win over the Rangers at Fenway. You were there for that, right, Ian?
Yeah, that was an exciting day, Trags.
Was he sunbathing in the right field lawn?
Yeah, you know, that's
a great story. You got to fill us in on the story behind this.
That went viral, man. You just don't see that every day, especially for a kid making his major league debut. You know, we talked to him in the morning when we got there, clubhouse open. He talked to us about 10:15, 10:20. And next thing you know, some people are hanging around the dugout. And all of a sudden, there's this guy with no shirt on in short right field, just kind of laying out and soaking in the sun, doing some leg, almost like yoga exercises while he was
planking almost.
What's that?
Planking almost.
Yeah, exactly. And people were just like, wow, what is this? So it just shows you this kid's got a little bit different. You know, he's not afraid to show it. He's not afraid to be himself. But yeah, that did go viral. And Alex Cora said something funny on the WEI pregame show interview that he does with, I can't remember if it was Joe or Will Fleming he was on with yesterday, but he said, they asked him about the sunbathing routine, and of course said, yeah, we're going to make some adjustments on that. So I think maybe the adjustment will include him having a shirt on.
Yeah, I would think so.
But it was pretty funny, though. It was pretty funny.
Go ahead.
Once he got out there, the thing that stuck out to me, he was tested right away on defense, and he made two good plays in the first inning. And for a kid who, you know, he's jittery there making his major league debut, to make those plays. And then in the third inning, he caught a hot shot, a one-hop hot shot that was not an easy play. Mm-hmm. So he's looked good on defense, because we just hear about this guy hitting. He's a baseball player, it looks like. And, you know, he's a big guy. At the plate so far, you know, he hasn't settled in yet. I mean, it takes a while for these guys. He's been a good hitter at every level. He really studies his hitting. He's kind of like a JD Martinez in how much he studies the craft of hitting.
Yep.
And he's a guy who should really use Fenway, man. He's a beast, Drags. You'll be shocked the first time you see him in person, where he says, hey, I have the power to go to right field of this park, and I can also play volleyball basically with that wall in left field. So left-handed hitters who have power and can go the other way, those are always the best hitters at Fenway. So really curious to see if he kind of will live up to the hype here, because we've seen a million of these prospects who have come up and, they haven't quite, we've seen it the last few years, haven't quite lived up to the hype. But this guy was a first-round pick. He's always been a good hitter. So, you know, I think that he will, to me, he's the best prospect they've called up since Rafael Devers in 2017. So whether he's going to turn into Rafael Devers, that's a lot of pressure to put on anyone. But I think, you know who, you'll like this, Trax. You know who Tristan Casas' hero is Joey Votto. That's the guy he's kind of modeled his whole hitting approach after. So Alex Cora likes these kind of guys. He doesn't like the feast or famine, new age slugger. He likes the guys who can put the bat on the ball and go to all fields, hit the gaps, and that's the kind of guy Casas is. Even though you look at him, he's 6'5 and 250, you're like, oh, this guy must be a 50 home run hitter. That's not really him. He's more, I think, going to be like maybe a 25 to 30 home run hitter, they hope, in his prime, but hitting maybe close to 300 and driving in 100 and hitting a bunch of doubles. So I think that it's going to be fun to watch him develop.
So Joey Votto is not a fan of the three sure results in baseball that we've heard so much about, you know, walk, strikeout, or home run.
Yeah, I mean, the Red Sox do like the walk, and Casas does have a pretty good batting eye, but I think just the ability to put the ball in play. Alex Cora said one of the things that the AAA manager Chad Tracy told him was that, you know, you got a man on third and less than two outs, he's going to either hit a ground ball to the right side and get this guy in, or hit a sac fly. Like, he's just a good situational baseball player. So we don't have enough of that in 22 baseball.
So a lot of Red Sox fans watching this and listening to this are wondering, okay, in the last 12 months, we've seen Bobby Dalbec, we've seen Jarren Duran, we've seen Jeter Downs.
Right.
You do get the sense that this position player is going to be different.
I do, just because he has that, you know, you've seen these guys come up, whether it's Pedroia or Bogarts, some of these guys just come up and you can just sort of feel their confidence in themselves. Like, hey, I belong at this level, you know, and you didn't feel that as much with Duran. You didn't feel that with Jeter Downs. You felt it a little bit with Dalbec just because he was kind of a confident kid, but he just can't figure out how to put the bat on the ball. But this guy, Casas, first-round pick, you know, he just seems to have the pedigree. I mean, he knows Eric Hosmer. They went to the same high school. Eric's been a mentor to him, so it's kind of fitting they're on the same team now. And I just think that this guy, he works so hard, and he's so obsessive about his hitting, and he's just such a big, strong guy. And he, like I said, he doesn't have big hole in the swing like Dalbec did. It's really hard to hit against today's MLB pitchers. There's so many guys with high velocity. But I think that Casas, I think he has what it takes up here. You know, you never know until you see how it plays out. But that's why I think that this month, Trags, is ideal for him, because you remember Dustin Pedroia.
Yes.
2006, they brought him up to the end of the season that year. It was a non-contending season like this one. And I think that helped him, even though he got off to a slow start in 07. Also, I think just the exposure to major league pitching, that helps him kind of going into next year. So I think these next few weeks are going to be really beneficial to Tristan Casas, just for him to see what the routine is at the major leagues, just to see what it takes to succeed up here.
Your colleague, Sam Dykstra with MLB.com and MILB.com, had a terrific piece on what to expect from Tristan Casas. And I want to bring this paragraph up because I think you can add some context to it, Ian. Casas missed almost 2 months with a right ankle injury in the middle of the season. Since returning to AAA Worcester on July 22nd, he slashed 296, 404, and 505 with five homers over 36 games before receiving the call this past weekend. The left-hander slugger had slashed 248, 359, 457 in 36 games through the first months of the season prior to the injury, signaling just how much he had adjusted AAA pitching over the second half of the campaign. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I just think he was getting used to the level, and you're probably going to see the same thing at the major leagues. It might take him a little while to really get to be the player that he's going to eventually be, but it shows that he can make adjustments, he can learn. And sometimes, I was talking to Trevor Story about this yesterday, but sometimes when you go down with an injury, man, it helps you reset a little bit. It helps you really think about what you need to do to get better, what you need to do to adjust. And I think that you saw that with Tristan, the high ankle sprain. It was too bad because they were really, I think, counting on calling this guy up probably in July,
right,
this year. And that got pushed back a couple months to September because he missed the 2 months with that high ankle sprain. He's a big lumbering body here. So I wonder, what they might do with him conditioning-wise in the offseason, too, if they want him to maybe shed a little bit of weight, because that's a big body to be carrying around all the time. But also, you don't want to take away his power either, so it's kind of a slippery slope. But I think he'll make some adjustments with the training staff. So maybe a high ankle sprain won't be a two-month injury next year, is what I'm saying. I think he's got to strengthen his whole core.
Want to move on to one pitcher that has received a lot of attention, a young pitcher, Brian Bayo. What you think his future is with the Red Sox? I mean, it's obviously right now with the Red Sox. What can he give the team going forward, especially next year?
Yeah, I'm impressed with this kid, Tragson, because they really called him up earlier than when he was ready. It's just because this team has been so decimated by injuries to the starting rotation. So at one point, they really had no choice but to bring him up in the middle of the season. And he got knocked around a little bit, as young pitchers are going to do as they learn how to pitch up here. But he really makes adjustments, and he's done that. He's seemed like he gets better each time out. He's got this 96-mile-an-hour sinker, and he's got a changeup, and he's just got a big arsenal of pitches. And he's another guy who kind of really does think he belongs here. He's very confident. Alex Cora told a funny story in spring training about when they sent him down. Bayo would sneak over to the major league breakfast buffet and sort of sneak back over to the minor league side with a little kind of like, I feel like I'm a big league. I don't feel like I need to eat the minor league breakfast. So it was just kind of funny. It wasn't like it wasn't off-putting. It was just kind of this funny thing that he did. But it shows that he's very confident in himself. And even on days he's been knocked around, I haven't seen this. You know how some kids get very sort of down on themselves? I haven't seen that with him once. I've just, he knows this is all part of the learning experience for him. And I think that this has been very beneficial. And having him start every fifth day for the next month, it's going to be as big for them as Tristan Casas playing every day. And I think that you're really sort of building up the future of the Red Sox here a little bit.
All right, I want to wrap up with news, and that is the extension, the one-year extension, $10 million that was announced on Tuesday morning for 2023 for Kike Hernandez. The value he's brought to the team and what he has had to endure this year. And I know you wrote about it here on Tuesday. The draining of that hematoma from his abdomen sounds like one of the most painful things any athlete could ever go through. And understand, he was not put under for that, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
that quote was hilarious. He said, "Oh, the doctor says that we usually put people under this." And he said, "Oh, that's usually something you tell somebody before they do it instead of after." But yeah, I mean, this guy has dealt with it. Nobody knew about this thing until months after it happened. They just said that he was out with a hip injury. We were all confused about why it was taking him so long to come back. So that explained it. But I think this is a good contract for both sides. The Red Sox are basically investing in the fact that they think he's going to get healthy and that they think that he's going to sort of get back to the player he was in 2021. And it's a one-year deal, $10 million. His last contract was 2 at 14. So for Kike, it gives him a little chance to sort of to build his value back up as he goes into free agency again next year. So I think it's something that should work. The Red Sox are going to get a motivated player here. And Kike is going to, you know, be paid pretty well, even after a really down year, both from an injury standpoint and from a production standpoint. So I think that it was a good idea to sort of, for Heim Bloom in the front office, to sort of make this deal. Because one thing, even though the numbers don't look great, man, playing defense and center field at Fenway Park is so important. It's a tough center field to play. And we saw
with Jaren Duran.
Yeah, exactly. And we saw with Bradley for years. And you make a great point about Duran. And Kike, just, he's excellent out there, man. I mean, nobody's ever going to be as good as Bradley was out there, probably, but he's pretty close. Last year, he was pretty close. And it's just center field defense is so important, especially in that ballpark. So they show the value they're putting on it by signing him to a deal for $10 million. You know, it's like a lot of people were very confused about why they were willing to pay Jackie Bradley Jr. $11 million or whatever it was this year. It's because they valued his defense in right field that much. And he just got to the point where he just couldn't hit enough to justify it anymore. But, you know, defense, you know, outfield defense, extremely important. It can make a pitching staff look good. And I like this deal. I think it was a smart move by both sides to sort of take this one-year, $10 million deal and then see where they are. It gives Kike another chance to sort of prove himself in 2023 and then see where they are coming after that.
And I'm going to ask you, wrap up with this, Ian, your thoughts on the Ken Rosenthal piece with Sam Kennedy and the kind of vote of confidence, essentially, what he gave not only Alex Cora, the manager, but Heim Bloom, the vice president of baseball operations, what you thought of that and why it was significant for Sam Kennedy to come forward with Rosenthal.
Yeah, I just think that, you know how Boston is, Trags? I mean, this might probably wouldn't have been necessary in Cincinnati or Kansas City or somewhere like that. But you were starting to hear rumblings like, oh, is Heim Bloom, is he okay? Is his job status okay? Because, I mean, they fired Dave Dombrowski less than a year after he won the World Series.
Yes.
So it shows you that these owners, they take this stuff really seriously. And Alex Cora, it's like, oh, is Alex Cora happy here now? And it's just kind of I think he was just wanted to get this out before the rumor started to percolate down the stretch. Like, oh, are these guys safe? Are they going to get rid of one of these guys or the other? It was just Sam Kennedy saying, hey, look, we're confident in both of these guys. But, you never know how these vote of confidences go, because I remember in 2015, John Henry having a press conference in that back room of the press box at Fenway Park. This was back when John Henry spoke to the media back in those days. And he said that, John Farrell and Ben Cherington are going to be here for a long time. And Farrell was around for a couple more years, but Cherington didn't even last that season. So sometimes you just have to calm the media. I mean, I do think Heim Bloom will be back next year. I think that he better put together a good team next year, though, because, you know, this is going to be two last place finishes for him in 3 years. And he can't do that three times in 4 years. He's got to have another good year next year. I think that they're going to give him another chance to kind of show that his vision is going to work here. So I do think both guys will be back. Alex Cora, I don't really put any of the season on Alex Cora. He just, too many injuries, too many flaws on the roster. He did the best he could, you know, quite honestly, with a tough roster. So with Alex, it's just a matter of, you know, how long does he want to be here? Because he said that he's not going to be, one of those guys who's Bobby Cox, who's been managing into, you know, late in his career. But he does have a daughter who's got a couple more. She's not even halfway through her time at BC yet. So I'm sure that he's going to want to manage this team as long as she's going to Boston College, at least.
You're going to get a tan? You're going to be Tristan Cassis and work on that tan?
I don't think so, Trag. It's a little hot for me out here in Tampa. We were out, me and your friend Bradfoe and a couple other people, Jen McCaffrey, we were out on the pier last night having a nice dinner with the 4 o'clock game. And even at that time of night, Trag, I'm talking 9 o'clock at night, it was steaming. It was just like the humidity is just like unbearable. I don't know how people live around here in the summer. So I think I'm going to save the tan. I'll leave that to Tristan and see how they go. Bronzing, as some people call it.
By the way, I lied. That one would not be the last thing. I wanted to ask you about the captain and if you saw it and saw all the episodes, and Jen McCaffrey was in one actually toward the very,
I know I texted her on that. I'm like, hey, there you are. It was during when Jeter was the owner of the Marlins. But
yes, that's right. When he held a scrum press conference, what did you think of that? And because it took, look, we both covered the Red Sox back, you know, in 03 and 04. I'll never forget going up to you when Pedro went out for the eighth inning. And I'm saying,
you were like, this is a huge mistake.
Huge mistake. And Grady's going to get fired because of this. And I remember feeling that way incredibly strongly. And obviously, you know, five outs away came back to haunt them. And then we know what happened in 04. But I thought, you know, like the man in the arena, you know, chronicling Tom Brady, I thought the Jeter documentary was well done.
Yeah, it was really well produced. And like, I got to know Jeter a little better during this thing. Some people are a little critical of it because it's like, you know, nothing's going to compare to the Jordan rule. The Last Dance. Sorry.
The Last Dance. Right.
Nothing's going to compare to The Last Dance. I mean, that thing was just unbelievable because of who Michael Jordan is, how honest he is about everything. Brady and Jeter are a little different. They're both a little more protective of their image. And I thought those two documentaries were excellent as well, but I really enjoyed the Jeter thing, especially the whole arc of his relationship with A-Rod, and just like how much losing bothers this guy. And it's just like, you got to the Dave Roberts steal, and you know, and they're talking to Jeter's like, can we move on? He's like, I don't want to talk about this,
right? So it genuinely bothers him.
Yeah, like those losses still bother him, like the loss in Arizona, the loss to the Red Sox, he mentioned the loss to the Marlins in the World Series. I mean, that stuff still bothers him to this day. So just the competitive fire he had, and just kind of the stubbornness, and just the you know, how much he wanted to be the shortstop and only the shortstop. And I thought it all came across really well in the documentary. I really enjoyed watching. I agree with you, kind of like for both of us, it brought back memories of kind of a golden age of baseball that we were sort of fortunate to cover. And it's not quite the same right now, especially with the Red Sox Yankees rivalry. You haven't seen it like that since then. It was such a great time. Every game, Trags, felt like a heavyweight fight. We remember it well, even the regular season games. And such a great time in our lives to cover that. So just kind of reliving that and hearing the voices and hearing Jeter talk about all that stuff. You know, I really enjoyed every episode of that.
Well, I want to make sure you hydrate, stay out of the sun, don't overdo it down in St. Pete, and keep doing an amazing job covering the Boston Red Sox. That is Ian Brown. You can follow him on Twitter at Ian M. Brown, E at the end, all one word. Obviously, follow him on RedSox.com and MLB.com. Ian, a pleasure as always. Thank you, my friend.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, Trags. Thanks a bunch.
All right. He is Ian Brown. I'm Mike Petralia, Trags. Thanks for downloading this episode of the Red Sox Beat, powered by the CLNS Media Network and our exclusive online gaming partner, betonline.ag. Talk to you next time.